right, now it's time to introduce our speaker. She is from Fresno, so let's give Fresno a hand. They're in the house. Woo! She has 8 years sober. Another big applause. I asked her, you know, how you do it, you know, and she said, by helping others and praying. And I think that's so beautiful. So please help me welcome Kate S. from Fresno. Kat.
It's okay.
Correct me.
I'm Kate and I'm an alcoholic. I'm Kat and I'm an alcoholic. Or you can call me Catherine, whatever. So, I'm so excited. I don't know what's going to happen next. You know, I want to welcome the newcomer, first of all. For any of you guys who are new, or if you took a chip today, that's awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. We all started there, so please keep doing what you're doing. And I want to thank Bill for asking me to speak. You have poor taste, and obviously a resentment towards this fellowship for asking me to speak today. So he'll be taking that all on you. You guys can take his inventory later. So I'd like to ask one thing, or a couple things of you guys before I, he needs the basket over there. Very serious about it. We need more than 81 today, please. I just ask that in hearing what I have to say tonight, or in me sharing my experience with you guys tonight, I ask that you ask yourself if what happened to me happened to you, if you felt the way that I felt, and if you think that what worked for me could work for you. And I just ask that you be open. I know I'm the kind of alcoholic where I started with a drink, everything happened in the middle, and I ended with a drink. And like someone said earlier, I love everything. More of everything, please. Thank you. So, you know, there's a great story in the book, and one of my first experiences with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was hearing that story. And it talks about, it's in the back of the book, and I encourage you guys to read it. It's called Freedom from Bondage, I think. Yes. Yes? Okay. So there's a part in it that speaks specifically about my story, which says that doctors would say that I was an alcoholic, that I was, I'm just going to read it because I'm so nervous right now that I'm going to totally mess it up and then, okay. So the medical profession would probably tell me I was conditioned for alcoholism by the things that happened to me in my childhood. And I am sure that they would be right as far as they go. But AA has taught me that I am the result of the way I reacted to what happened to me as a child. What is much more important to me, AA has taught me that through this simple program I may experience a change in this reaction pattern that will indeed allow me to match calamity with serenity. And if you asked me 8 years ago, I had my eight-year birthday on Monday, but if you would have asked... None of my doing, okay? That's because a higher power loves me unconditionally for some odd reason. But if you would have asked me 8 years ago or why I was an alcoholic, I would have absolutely told you it was because of what happened to me as a child. It was because of the way I grew up and the circumstances around me growing up. You could have put a lie detector band on my arm and it would have showed that I was telling the truth because I absolutely thought that. I thought that people who came from families that I came from drank because that's just what we do. I'm one of 11 kids. That's a gigantic part of my story. I'm the second oldest. I'm the oldest girl. I never met my dad. Everyone below me is from a stepdad. And when you come from a family that size, there's a lot of uncertainty. My experience has been that there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of unknowing. There's a lot of unprotection. There's a lot of absenteeism. And I just thought that, you know, that's just how every family grew up. I just thought everyone didn't have electricity or everyone got dealt with the way I got dealt with. I didn't know that people lived any differently. You know, there's a lot of prison in my childhood. There's a lot of children born in between, like, parole dates and, you know, returns back to prison. There's a lot of, you can kind of tell the era of where my stepdad was at. And, you know, some of my earliest memories were just not fitting in, hiding. I'm different. Something's wrong with me. And, at the age of 14, I found alcohol. And alcohol made me, I could say that I had one of my first spiritual experiences, and by spiritual experience means a change in behavior. I had my first change in how I felt at the age of 14 when I took my first drink, and it wasn't hardcore. I wasn't, you know, it wasn't Hennessy or anything, you know, awesome or. It was St. Ives, and it was, you know, I like to say that I drank alcoholically, meaning I took a drink, and I had to have another, and I drank and drank and drank and drank and drank, and I was at a slumber party, I was 14 years old, and for some reason I was able to feel comfortable, for some reason I was able to do the things I could never do, because alcohol gave me that power. I felt comfortable, I felt like I belonged, I felt like I was worthy, I felt like I could be around these people. And, you know, at the end of that night, everyone, maybe had one drink, and I drank all the alcohol. And then I ended up back at this abandoned house I used to live in, wondering why, what had happened. You know, I had done some stuff, everyone was pissed off at me, and I didn't understand why. And so I left that party about 3 o'clock in the morning. I was 14 years old, and I was just hanging out at this house thinking, oh, I don't think this is how it's supposed to go, but I'm going to try to eat a burrito next time, or I'm going to drink water, or I'm not going to drink with those girls. I'm going to drink liquor, or I'm going to. And that started this thing for me. I thought my drinking was a math equation. I was going to figure out how I was going to control and enjoy my drinking. And it talks a lot about that in the book. You know, I began to think that, you know, I could change the circumstances. I could change what I drank. I could change, and for some reason, that I would be able to drink how I wanted to drink. I would be pretty, and I wouldn't be, you know, vomiting down the front of my shirt or peeing my bed or blacking out. You know, at the age of 16, I was already a blackout drinker. And so my earliest memory was I drank a lot with my older brother, and he introduced me to everything. And I remember waking up out of a blackout on an overpass in Hanford. And my brother's holding me by the back of my shirt, and I'm waking up to this cop yelling at me, what's your name? What's your name? And I was like, what the hell is going on? And he's like, he already hit to the game. He's like, this is my sister Catherine, and we just live right down the street. Can you please let us go home? And all of our friends went to jail that night, but we walked home. And, you know, I didn't intend on that. I never intended on blacking out. I never intended on embarrassing myself. I never intended on losing my dignity. I never intended on doing the things that I said I would never do, that I promised people I would never do. Never intended on those things. But the thing that I realized is that I had this thing happen to me, which is the book refers to it as an allergy, you know, and what I know it to be is an abnormal reaction. I didn't know that at 14 years old I was putting alcohol in an alcoholic body. I had an abnormal reaction, and that abnormal reaction is that I would get a drink and I would go insane. I had to have another one. I'm the kind of alcoholic that is like at a social event where people are normal and I need to look like I know what's going on, and I'm wringing my fingers. I can't wait to get another drink. I can't wait to drink uninhibited. I can't wait to get as much as I can, as fast as I can. If you're an alcoholic like me, you walk up to that bar, you order 3 drinks and an energy drink because you need to be up. You know, you don't stop, you know, and I remember a lot of times it being, you know, 12 or 1, and I'm in a panic because I am not drunk enough yet, and I know 2 o'clock is going to come, and I need to manipulate and lie and cheat and steal to get someone to buy me some alcohol or take me to the store. I need to get drunker, and I'm in a panic. You know, I have to have it, and I prefer, my preference is just to be gone. I just want to be blacked out. I don't want to feel. I don't want to know. I don't want anything. I just want it to be black. You know, and in that blackness, I did a lot of stuff, you know. I'm the kind of alcoholic where I wake up in the morning and I got to check my body. Like, okay, what did I got to put the pieces together. I got to see, okay, well, where did this bite mark come from? And who is this? And where are my pants? And, you know, like, where's my wallet? Like, I'm like MacGyver and Magnum P.I. trying to put the pieces together, you know. And I'm looking and I'm calling, and I always get those calls in the morning. Do you know what you did? You know, and I'm really not I'm really not a violent, I'm a pretty good time, you know, like, I have a pretty good time, but, you know, like, it's all that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, and by that, I mean, what that means to me is that every time I would tell myself I wouldn't do that thing, you know, whatever it may be, I wouldn't do it. And when I get a little alcohol in me, it's a green light. You know, it's going to happen, and I'm probably going to do it a couple times. You know, because I can't care. I can't care about my welfare. I can't care about my safety. I can't care about my family. I can't care about the person I love. I can't. I don't even, that stuff goes out the door, you know. And there's a great part in the book. It talks about, it talks about the real alcoholic, and it's on page 21. And I really identify it. It talks about being more or less insanely drunk. And that is exactly me. I have never had one drink. I don't even know what that looks like. I am always all in. All in, always, you know. At the age of, I never went to jail. You know, I never had a DUI. I always got the job. I'm a great liar. I'm a great thief. I'm a great manipulator. So on the outside, I'm good. I'm not an alcoholic. Alcoholic's the guy that pushes the cart. Alcoholic's the guy who gets the DUIs. Alcoholic's the girl who leaves her kids or whatever. Whatever my idea of the alcoholic was, I wasn't that. You know, turned 21 and alcohol's expensive out there. And I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. You know, I'm good. I'm going to drink 40s in my shower. You know, this is too much. You know, but I still have this intense need to front. You know, I'm just such an incredible fronter, hiding. You know, you walk in my house, you know something's up. You look inside my car, you know something's up. You look inside my bank account, you know something's up. On the outside, got it all together. Got the right clothes, drive the right car, hang out with the right people, have the right mascara, wearing the right purse, you know. But, you know, you see stacks and stacks of unopened mail. You know, you see, I haven't talked to my family, my brothers and sisters, those 10 brothers and sisters. I haven't talked to them in 8 months because I can't bear to go be accountable. I can't bear to their questions. I can't bear them, their what I think is disgust when they look at me because I've just gone that far. You know, I just can't care. Every graduation I've missed because I've made some excuse and thrown some fit to not be there. You know, and I had such intense anxiety about going and seeing them because I know I owe. I am always owing something or someone. I just can't get out from under that. And so I do this thing where I go away and then I'm like pacing. I'm like, oh, I gotta go talk to them. What am I gonna do? And then 2 more months, I'm like, oh my God, now it's really bad. What am I gonna do now? Like, I gotta go see them, but I can't because my mom's gonna, what am I gonna say? Where have I been? You know, like, I can't tell them that I've been screwing off my whole life drinking in a blackout, you know, doing whatever I feel like. You know, so when I would go, I'd go over there and I just throw money at everything and do everything for everyone, and then I'd be gone for another 8 months. You know, they don't even know who I am. You know, I'm an inconvenience pretty much at this part. I'm just one of the person who goes over there and annoys them. You know, so fast forward to my 20s. You know, I can drink unattended. Don't have to answer to anyone. You know, and I could do what I want to do. I have my own place, and on the outside, I guess I look normal, but like I said, I can't really function as a human being. I just really can't. I can't function. You know, I don't. Everything's mechanical to me. I'm just doing it because I see other people do it. I don't know what it's like to tell the truth. I don't know what it's like to have a purpose. There's no purpose to my life. What started to happen is that I had some success. You know, I got a really good job. And I started waking up on my bathroom floor in my own vomit in the morning. And I'm like, ooh, people die this way. This isn't normal. You know, I had people praying over me while I slept. You know, my friend was doing Reiki. When I wasn't, like, demonic, I would have to be asleep for people to deal with me. I'm not even exaggerating. Like, possession, demon, that's like the exorcist. I mean, that's what people refer to me as. You know, how, don't even talk to me about my alcoholism because I would eat your face off. Like, I would tell you exactly why it was okay and what I've been through and who the hell do you think you are. I would tell you exactly where it is. And don't you look at me, the car, the clothes, the shoes, the job. Like, I'm not an alcoholic, you know. And then you can go now. Thank you. We're done here. You know, and then bye. You know, I was inconvenienced by people. And, sorry. I see there's kids. But, I mean, you can't. So I'm waking up on my own vomit. Real classy-like. And I'm like, people die this way. People die this way, and for some reason, I've been willing myself to die for so long, I just didn't want to, you know, and the person I was dating was like, we should go to church, and I was like, yes, and I'm like, where'd that come from? I'm like, whoa, that's not me, but oh, I still have to keep falling down. I mean, that's not where it ended. You know, I hit a bottom, and a friend of mine introduced me to AA. Well, she didn't really introduce me. It's not like she walked me over to it. She said, I'm going to AA. And I was like, yes, that. I was so desperate. Anything. Okay. Buddhism. Yes. You know, recycling, whatever. Yes, that. You know, I don't care. PETA, whatever. I just knew what I was doing wasn't working. And I knew that anything had to be better than wanting to die every day. Waking up and being like, I'm alive, damn it. You know, fantasizing about dying. I knew something had to be better than that, you know. And I actually got sober in Hanford. I went to some meetings in Hanford. And, you know, it was really gross. Everyone was all lovey, and I was uncomfortable, and they wanted to touch you, and then they'd hugging, and then old people, and false teeth. And if you've ever been to meetings in Hanford, like, the meeting I went to was in downtown, and the cockroaches in downtown Hanford will carry you away. They are gigantic. I'm serious, if you guys have ever been there, it's not okay. So I'm sitting there with my feet up on the chair, like all Indian style, trying to look normal, trying to look like I, you know, like I have 30 days, and I don't, you know, and I get there, like, right when the meeting starts, I leave when the meeting ends. You know, I don't want to interact with anyone. I don't want, you know, like, it's uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable for me to hear people be honest. It was uncomfortable for me to hear people talk about real stuff. Stuff I grew up, you don't say that. You don't talk about that stuff. You don't, you know, we keep that stuff in the house. No one talks about that. That's not a problem. Everyone does that, you know. And people were talking about some real stuff, and it was very intimidating and made me feel very uncomfortable. And I remember I was on my way, you know, meeting was over, and I was like, amen, and then I just ran, you know. And I was trying to get to my car, and this old guy cornered me, and I was like caught between, like, oh my God. I'm like, no, he wants the 13th step me, and I'm like, you know. And this girl was like, oh hey, I have that thing for you that you were needing, the thing, remember? And I was like, oh yeah, I want that thing, can I have it, give it to me now. And she was like, I'm sorry, I just had to do that to get you away from that guy, because, and I was like, thank you. And then thus my AA BFF. And so we had the same sponsor, we got the same sponsor, we started working the steps. And you know, I did probably about a year, probably about 6 months in sobriety. I was like, I'm just going to move, get a new job, get a new relationship, and just completely start my whole life again. And that's just how it's going to be. And so I moved up to Fresno. That's why I'm in Fresno now. And the person I was dating was, every one of their friends was an AA, and I just couldn't get away from it. And, you know, I got a sponsor in Fresno, and I really started working the steps. And, you know, there was a, you know, I still was, I was 27 years old. I wasn't, didn't want to be here. I was, you know, I was pissed off. I was angry. You know, I had plenty of years to go, and I had never imagined my life without alcohol, and I was angry. And I couldn't hear. And I just could not hear. People were telling me good stuff, too. And I was like, oh, that's nice. That sounds good. That's good for you. Are you going to drink that coffee? You know, I just couldn't hear them. And I sat in a women's meeting because that was suggested to me. And they always brought treats. And this woman said that she had lost her dignity. And I was like, oh, how embarrassing. I'm so embarrassed for her right now. I can't believe she said that. And I'm looking around like, ugh, and no one's having the reaction. I'm the only one having that reaction. Everyone's like, he's doing the, you know, like AAs do, like, or just a little, like, head bob, like, yeah, like that, I agree with you. And I'm like, this is so weird. And then so I thought about it, and you know what? She gave me words to the thing that I was feeling, and I was like, and that was one of my first spiritual experiences, is that, yeah, that. I totally agree with that. And now I was intrigued. I'm like, I'm going to see what else they're saying. And then, like, since I had that little tiny jewel of knowledge, I immediately went to another women's meeting and said it. You know, I coined it as my own. And it felt so good, you know. And I started listening, and I started identifying. I did that. That happened to me. Oh, my God. I did that. That happened to me. Oh, I did that. That happened to me. I did that. That happened to me. And you know, I just started to let my guard down. And you guys could say the things that I could never, ever say. I never had the balls to say any of that stuff. And you guys said it, and you weren't even scared. Like, it had no power. And I started doing that, you know, first at home or with my AABFF or in the mirror. And then I could say it to the other people. And I got honest. That was my first experience with honesty. Yeah, that was me. I did that. And my life started to change. You know, I have a little note. Let me see. Okay. So, so I have this job, and it's a good job. I love it. But I'm trying to, let me see how I can put this. I remember this one occasion specifically where I had this abnormal reaction to my job. And I'm in this, you know, I'm with my the person I work with, and we're in this situation where this guy had just found out he was paralyzed. You know, he's in a coma. And they're like, oh, we're going to wake him up, and you get to be here when we tell him that he's paralyzed from the legs down. And I had looked at his chart, and it looked like all kinds of HIPAA violations, but I just wanted to see his age. And he was my age. And I was like, instead of being like, ooh, well, sucks to be you, I immediately went to his bedside, and I said a prayer. And my partner's like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I just wanted to check something. And I was like, oh, my God, I was so embarrassed. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I just did that. I totally gave up game right now. They're going to know. And it totally didn't, that was not of me. I don't do stuff like that. I don't really like to, you know, like at that point in sobriety, I was like, wasn't sold on the God thing, you know. But I did it anyways, and it was instinctual. I didn't even think about it. And I was like, oh, something's happening in me. So I knew something was going on. And, you know, I continued doing this thing. At about 3 years sober, I had the two things. You know, there's like, I had these two reservations. I'm like, these two things happened, green light. No one's going to be pissed off if you go out and drink. They're totally going to understand. You're just going to do your thing. And so I had those two things happen to me, like, within a two-month period in sobriety. And I'm like, whoa, you know, what's going to happen, you know? And, you know, the women in AA held me up. And I didn't drink over it. I didn't drink. I wanted to die, but I didn't. And I just kept going to meetings, and I kept being with you people. And I walked through that stuff. That stuff that I thought was just going to be the end of me, the stuff that I had been holding on to all my life, saying, if those two things happen, it's okay. You know, and I didn't have to, you know. And as a matter of fact, one of those things was my mom got really, really sick. And, you know, I wasn't done punishing her yet. You know, I had still had lots and lots of years of pissed offness I needed to expel onto her. And I wasn't ready for her to go. And plus all those younger brothers and sisters I would have to be in charge of. I wasn't ready for all that. Too much, you know, I had stuff to do. And you know, I walked through that, and I got to be of service, and I got to sit with my mom, not knowing whether she was going to live or die, and just be there for her, and be there for my brothers and sisters, and walk them through it, you know. That was the first time I ever, first of all, we were all together that night when the doctor said, you need to have everyone come here. My brother that was on house arrest was like, peace, I'm going, arrest me if you want. So here he comes, very classy himself, in his ankle monitor, to the emergency room, and, you know, like, we're not a religious family, we're not a spiritual family, we don't talk about God, I wasn't raised that way. And so the chaplain walked in, and we're like looking at each other, and he's like, do you want to pray? And we're like, yeah, let's do this, let's handle it, you know, like. And I had the first time I ever prayed with my family, and it was amazing, and it was really, really, really awesome. And you know, I got to walk through those experiences, and I didn't have to drink. You know, I would say about at 4 years sober, I had this chunk of time, I'm not even going to say a moment, where I got really pissed off. My mom didn't pass away, by the way, I forgot to tell that to you guys. Didn't die, she's ornery as hell, she's like a cockroach, she has 11 kids, I mean, come on, she birthed 11 kids, she's tougher than that. So she's alive, she's kicking. I got a lot of fresh resentments towards my mom. I had made amends to her, and then I got a lot of fresh resentments towards my mom, and I wasn't supposed to be funny. Okay, but I had to do some work on that. And what God revealed to me in that work was that I had forgotten. You know, like I have a fast forgetter. I don't know if you guys do that. I have a fast forgetter. But what I remembered was that I was the daughter who used to belittle my mom. I would make sure she knew exactly what I thought about her and how insignificant and how unaccomplished. And I used to just belittle her until she would cry. And I had forgotten about that. I would use her. She would be my, because I wasn't 21, so I had to have someone buy me alcohol. So I'd just go to her specifically to buy me alcohol, and then I'd be like, peace, you know, oh, I'm fine, peace, bye, you know, and I would use her. And I had forgotten all about that, you know, and God revealed that to me when I was in the midst of my resentment towards her, and revealed some stuff that was true about myself and who I was as a daughter. And, you know, and I was really pretty lucky to have a mom like that. You know, there's a roof over my head. You know, the people who were trying to hurt us didn't get to. And I'm pretty lucky. But in that time frame, I was struggling with this concept of a higher power. I still was not sold on this God thing. And at 4 years sober, you think I would have been. Like, I was really faking it. And but I wanted to believe. I wanted to want. And I had this experience where I realized that, you know, I just couldn't imagine anything loving me unconditionally. You know, this higher power, not after everything I did or everything I saw or everything I let happen. I just couldn't imagine anything loving me. And I struggled with that for a little bit. And what I realized is that I suffer from this terminal uniqueness. I know it's cliche around here, but I'm different. I'm special. And what your God doesn't work for me, this idea of this God, I need something else, something cooler, something maybe with some hemp or some dreadlocks. You know, I need something different because I'm different and I'm special. And I just like writhed on the floor not wanting what you guys had. And what I did is I did it anyway. I trusted anyways, you know, and what I realized is that I never had any experience in faith. I mean, like, I'm like grounded in this, in here, and now, and these, and what I do. You know, I had no experience in trusting, and you know, what I imagined was is that I'm on this cliff, and over there is it. You know, all those it, that, thing, whatever I want, it's on that side. And it looks like I can jump, but I am too scared. Here's cool. This is okay over here. I got what I need. Not a big deal. I can survive probably. But that thing looks shiny over there, and I want it. But I see people jumping, but I just don't have the balls to do it. And it's, you know, like I might pull a ligament or something if I do it. But I did it anyways. I jumped. You know, and I had no experience in doing it anyways. And no experience in that faith. You know, and someone said it once, is trusting in advance what will only make sense in reverse. I never had any experience getting over to that side, so I could look back and see it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big deal to do that thing, you know. And so I did that because I saw you guys do it. And I started having different experiences in my life. And with praying, with God, with you guys, with being honest, with being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I think about 5 years sober, I got what are called children. And let me tell you, some of the stuff my mom did, it started to make sense. You know, the other day, I had to write 1,000 lines one time from that stepdad. And I hate, oh man, I was like, you cruel, just like perverse. Like, how could you make a child write 1,000 times, I will sweep the floor thoroughly? That makes sense to me now. That totally makes sense. You know, I was talking to my mom on Monday, and I'm like, the stuff she's saying makes sense. You know how much I don't want it to make sense? But it really does, you know? And I got into this relationship with another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she had children. And I was like, okay, you know, I usually don't do that because, first of all, I need all the attention. I don't want to share. You know, like, that's too much work. And, you know, I had this idea. And without any experience, like I said, that's what I do. And I was going to be this awesome mom, and I was going to have this awesome relationship and stuff. And you know, I am not good at it. Relationships are not my thing. It doesn't matter who it's with. People are hard for me to deal with. I don't understand them. You guys never do what I tell you to do. If you would just, you know, but you don't. So here's the thing. I'm in love with someone who's an alcoholic, suffering from the same thing. And I'm terrified. You know, what if that person goes out and drinks? You know, what's going to happen to these children? What am I going to do? You know, I'm so used to giving myself completely and that other person being my higher power. I have to do something different. You know, I have to be willing to walk away from anything or anyone if they get in the way of my sobriety. You know, and guess what? That's what she told me too, is that if I get in the way of her sobriety, she's going to walk away from me too. Okay. You know, so here she is. I move in with her. You know, let me backtrack a little bit. I'm the kind of alcoholic who likes to be in a position of superiority. I realize that about myself. That's one of those character defects of mine, is that I prefer to be the breadwinner. I to make more money, you need to be more dependent on me than me on you. And I just like to be in that position of power so I can have control. And I really prefer that. And this person didn't need me to cook, didn't need to clean. She had her own house. She had a job. She raised her kids herself. She was educated. She had her own car with insurance. And, you know, she was like, I'm like, what do I bring to the table? Like, I can't, like, you don't need me. You know, I had to be thoughtful. I had to be, you know, I had to develop, like, who am I if I'm not taking care of you? You know, I had to develop myself. And let me tell you, that was crazy. That was an experience, you know, and I realized a lot about myself. Excuse me. And, you know, I had to do some inventories on like a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, but whatever, that's what I'm taught to do, is that, you know, all those childhood issues, all those unresolved childhood issues, that guy that was in and out of prison, I don't think I told you guys this, but he was pretty abusive, and he used to beat the crap out of me and all my brothers and sisters, and I don't know any different. You're quiet. You don't draw attention to yourself. You just do what you're told because you don't want anyone seeing you. You don't want to be handled. You know, and so that's what I took to this relationship, and I had to learn something different. You know, you can't go, every time I would act out in that way, I would hate myself. I would hate myself for putting hands on these kids, and why is this person staying with me, you know, and I went through these, you know, I just had some hard times in learning how to be a parent, and I had an expectation that because I hated that dude so much, I wouldn't act that way, but I didn't, you know. I would love to say that I was this perfect parent who never abused, you know, or put hands on their children, but that's not my story, you know. I don't have to be that way anymore. I don't act that way anymore, and saying that from a podium in a room that probably has other women or mothers, you know, I hope that, you know, that relieves some of that power, is that I'm not perfect in that sense, and I just don't act that way anymore, and I'm incredibly grateful. So, you know, we do timeouts, we do other things. I never knew that there was anything else other than the way I grew up, you know, and this woman kept trusting me with her kids in spite of, you know, she taught me how to be a mom. She's an amazing mother, and her mother's an amazing mother, and just like I learned from you guys here, I learned from those two women how to be a mom, about how to sit down and do homework, about how to show them, not just tell you to go wash the mirrors, but to show you how to go wash the mirrors, because that's what was taught to me, is that you guys show me how to live, therefore I'm teaching my kids how to live too. And you know what, those kids, they're free. I have never seen two boys more free in their life. I was so constricted as a child, like I was so like, don't get dirty, don't get, you know, just don't draw any attention to yourself that might reflect bad on your parents, you know. And dropping my 5-year-old off the other day, he jumped in every single puddle in right? And without a care in the world. He's not afraid of me. He's not afraid of what I'm going to do. He's not afraid. He is free. And that's a byproduct of this program. That's because our household is based on these principles. And that we have God in our life, in our household. You know, our kids know God. And that unconditional love and that grace, that love undeserved. Our kids know that because we work a program. And we surround ourselves by people in recovery as well. I kind of wanted to fast forward to a little bit about what's going on right now in my life. H&I is a really big part of my life. H&I stands for hospitals and institutions, and hospitals and institutions take meetings into places where people can't get out. So jails, prison, treatment centers, any place where the alcoholic is confined. All those people are going to come out and fill these rooms, you know, so we take the message out to them. And there has been an amazing spiritual experience in that for me, is that God is always present in the rooms of H&I. I don't know what it is, but there's something special about those people who have to be stopped. I mean, that's not my story. I walked in to AA. I mean, like, I was desperate, and I was, you know, but I got to walk in of my own free will. There's something special about the people who have to come in because they're court ordered to, or because their kids are being taken away, or because they've got, you know, that was where I was at. Okay, legal issues. Apparently he knows what I'm talking about then. This last weekend I got to go to the International Women's Conference for Alcoholics Anonymous. It was in Palm Springs. And by what I mean is I didn't actually get to go. We drove up there and it was closed. We didn't even get to register, but we're in Palm Springs. It's 84 degrees and I'm with a bunch of other women in recovery. So what do? We shop and eat. And And then we got to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in Palm Springs. And you know what? I am so lucky because I can go anywhere and not know a dang person and know, you know, and feel at home because you guys, you know, because we're all related. And you know, they welcomed us with open arms, and AA is always different in every single place. And we had a really good time. My three friends that I went with, when we got back to Fresno, I was like, don't call me for 2 weeks. I'm over you. 5-hour road trip, so you guys know, you can understand what I'm talking about there. But, you know, I have never been, I'm always completely surprised at how lucky I am in this program and how abundant really my life is. And it's not because I have things, shiny things. It's because there's like freedom, you know. And I didn't come in here trying to get that. I came in here just trying to be classy, trying not to puke down my shirt or pee in my bed or black out. Apparently we have the same story. I'm just trying to make it. I'm just trying to get through this, you know. And, you know, the freedom is a byproduct of this program. And if you're new in the program and you're just looking for some relief, I recommend that you get a sponsor and you work the steps. You know, right now my life consists of that step 10 and step 11, you know, and it's growing in effectiveness, growing in some, well, I'm just trying to get closer to my higher power. There's a phrase that I wanted to say, but I just really messed that up. Just trying to constantly turn towards my higher power because I get relief there. And I was in a meeting earlier today, 6:30 meeting, so early. I find that I'm really docile in the morning so I can actually hear. And this guy was talking about he didn't know what God's will was. He doesn't know when he's in his will or in God's will. And from my experience, I know when I'm in God's will when everything just happens. You know, when I'm in my will, it's a constant struggle. It's like I'm low crawling up the wrong direction of a stream. Everything's a struggle, and it's always hard, and I'm always having to align these parts and call the person and make sure they're there on time, and everything has to be organized, and that's my will. And I suffer when I'm in my will, you know, and I'm not by any means, you know, work a perfect program. I'm not by any means, do this thing perfectly. I just know that when I'm asked to do something, I do it, and that's willingness in action. You know, when people ask of me, I say, yeah, okay, let's do that. And my life is based around this program, and I'm really, really, really grateful. And thank you.
All right. Oh my God. Thank you.